Welcome to a new deep dive. Today we're peeling back a really fascinating layer in the audio world. We're exploring what you might call meta-podcasting, that intriguing space where one show basically makes another show its main subject.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like podcast commentary, but, you know, often way more involved, maybe more intimate, sometimes even like a whole show after the show kind of thing.
Yeah, and what's really fascinating here, I think, is how it's not just about reviewing something. It's about creating this whole new narrative that runs alongside the original content. Sometimes it even gets deeply intertwined with it.
Right.
So in this deep dive, we'll look at how a show like this carves out its own space, you know,
right,
building its own audience by offering this consistent weekly analysis that goes way beyond just summarizing.
Yeah, we'll look at the structure, the hosts' own takes, their perspectives, and the pretty passionate community that's grown up around
it. Exactly.
So our mission here is really to pull out the key nuggets from their journey, what they're saying, how the audience is reacting. Just give you a shortcut to understanding this unique corner of the podcast world.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's get into it. So let's start with the actual subject, the Joe Rogan JRE for short. And like we said, this isn't just about Joe Rogan himself. It's a weekly breakdown of his show, his guests, and what that says about, well, fan culture, commentary, that whole audio landscape.
Yeah, the sources describe it as a comedy podcast. It's updated weekly, and it's put together by a team of four hosts: Floyd, Simon, Kamar, and Chico.
Right, and it does exactly what the name suggests, doesn't it? It's a deep weekly dissection of the main Joe Rogan experience, looking at the guests, the topics.
Mm-hmm, everything. And they've been incredibly consistent. They started back in 2018, apparently.
Yeah, 2018.
Wow. And they've put out, what, 454 episodes to date?
That's
quite a run.
It really is.
Yeah.
That kind of consistency in this space, it says something, right? About the demand for this kind of analysis and their commitment to it.
Definitely. And, well, probably no surprise, given the source material, it carries an explicit content rating.
Right. You'd expect that. You know, one of the first things that jumped out at me looking into them was their tagline. It's very direct.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
It's leave your one-star reviews below. Let the hate flow.
Wow. Okay. That tells you something immediately, doesn't it?
It really does. About their tone, the kind of relationship they're aiming for with listeners. It's almost like a challenge. You know?
Absolutely. It's a bold opening, for sure. And it signals the certain ethos.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that there's such a dedicated audience for a commentary show. It's not just about people wanting to critique. It points to, I think, a more sophisticated kind of listener engagement now. Well, it feels like we're moving past just passive listening. People want to actively process stuff, maybe even deconstruct it together as a community. And JR kind of taps into that, providing a space where that active engagement can happen. For some people, listening to the review might even be more satisfying than listening to the original.
That's a really interesting point. And their average rating kind of backs that up. Maybe it's 3.0 out of 5 stars, but that's from over 1,200 reviews.
Exactly. That 3.0 suggests that Let the Hate Flow isn't just a gimmick. It really does attract a very opinionated, diverse, and pretty vocal group of listeners.
Okay, so we've got the basic idea, but let's dig into the show itself, the hosts, because like you said, they're not just summarizing, they're bringing their own thing to it.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
The host dynamics seem like a huge part of the appeal. They often use this self-aware kind of humor, like take episode 354, week of August 11th, 17th. They apparently noted no Simon this week, which is ironic, considering he got a government alien guest. And then they add, did Kamar and I kill each other? Can we make it through an episode just the two of us?
Right. So it shows that internal banter, how they adapt if someone's missing.
Yeah.
They're building this ongoing story around themselves, too.
Exactly. It's that relatable, maybe slightly chaotic energy that probably keeps it feeling fresh and personal for people who listen regularly.
And one host, Kamar, seems to pop up a lot in these descriptions.
Yeah.
Like he's a recurring character in their own narrative.
Yeah, definitely. He seems to get a lot of focus.
Yeah.
In episode 351 from late July, they celebrated the return of the K-Man, world traveler, and then joked, imagine if the CIA recruited Kamar.
Okay, so they're playing with his persona.
Totally. And then going back just a bit further, episode 349, there's this other reference. Well, sober Kamar is world traveler, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Our boy is leaving us for the rest of the month to tour Europe. It would only make sense that Kamar gets sober and gets rich within 2 years.
So it's this blend of, like, personal updates, but also kind of myth-making around their own team.
Precisely. It's this mix of, real anecdotes and just playful speculation. They almost treat each other like characters in their own ongoing saga.
Right.
And that personal touch, layered on top of the Rogue and Review stuff, that's what gets listeners invested in them, not just the commentary. It gives you another reason to tune in each week.
It fosters that connection, that loyalty to the JRE guys themselves.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's clear they don't just, praise Rogan. They get critical.
Yeah.
How do they handle that? Is it just negativity or is there more to it? Especially with that let the hate flow thing.
That's a really good question because the tagline could suggest just pure negativity, right? But looking at the examples, it seems more like they understand their audience really well. They often seem to tap into a kind of shared frustration or maybe an unspoken feeling that lots of Rogan listeners might have sometimes.
Like what kind of thing?
Like, less about just tearing the show down and more about that shared, sometimes exasperated, can you believe he said that? Or why aren't they talking about this feeling? That kind of thing really resonates with listeners. It validates their own critical thoughts, maybe.
Yeah, I can see that. It makes JRE feel like a voice for a part of the audience that might feel unheard otherwise.
Exactly. It can be almost like a relief for listeners to hear someone else articulate what they were thinking.
You can really hear that frustration sometimes. In episode 353, covering early August, one of them apparently just went off saying, and I'm quoting here,
Okay.
"Man, oh man, I'm not normally the one to say something like this, but I'd love an Alex Jones, Eddie Bravo podcast right about now."
Whoa.
Yeah, just some mindless fun bullshit. Throw a bunch of conspiracies in my face. Whatever. Anything other than what we've been getting, please. For the love of God, anything.
Wow,
Yeah.
that's some raw exasperation right there.
Totally unfiltered.
And that speaks volumes, doesn't it? It taps into that feeling some long-term listeners of any big show get sometimes wanting the content to meet their expectations, or maybe wanting it to go back to how it used to be.
Yeah, the good old days feeling.
Right. And it shows Jerry is willing to voice opinions maybe more mainstream outlets wouldn't touch. They're directly reflecting and validating how some listeners feel.
Giving voice to those who maybe want different guests or a return to a certain style.
Exactly. And they also seem to point out things the main JRE show might gloss over or avoid entirely.
Yeah, the sources mentioned they brought up the Epstein situation more than once, for
Yeah.
instance.
Oh.
In episode 352, they noted something like, "Four guests and not a single mention of Epstein. Just brush this thing under the rug real quick."
Pointed.
And then in an earlier episode, 438, back around early July, they apparently said, quite provocatively, "Big surprise, Epstein did kill himself and there was no list." So, nothing to see here, I guess.
Okay, so they're not just commenting on what is said, but also on what isn't being discussed on the main show.
Precisely.
And if you connect that to the bigger picture, it really positions JRE as this space where listeners can hear those kinds of critiques, those observations about content choices, about guest choices. This type of commentary podcast often finds its niche by addressing what the main show doesn't cover, or maybe can't cover.
Right.
So they end up serving this need for more in-depth, maybe sometimes more cynical or contrarian discussion that you won't get from the original source. They're kind of providing an alternative narrative, filling in perceived gaps.
Okay, so we've seen how they critique Rogan, how they have
Yeah.
their own host dynamics. But how does this actually land with the audience? What are the reactions like?
Well, like we touched on with the rating, the reviews are apparently quite the ride.
Oh, okay.
It reflects a listener base that's not just engaged, but like deeply, sometimes really emotionally invested. You see the whole spectrum.
Any example?
Yeah, there's one reviewer, title, "Most of the Time, Fun to Listen To," from back in May. They actually mentioned starting a drinking game.
Oh, every time Kamar says Morocco, I take a shot of vodka. Alcohol poisoning in 30 minutes.
Okay, so some playful engagement there.
Right. But then this same reviewer says something pretty powerful. I listen to these guys instead of Joe because he has become nearly insufferable. Good work, guys. Keep it up.
Wow. That's a strong statement. That's not just like in the commentary, that's replacing the original with it.
Exactly. It really speaks volumes about the value this kind of commentary show can provide for some listeners. It shows it can become the primary experience for them.
But then
Yep.
there's the other side of that let the hate flow coin, right?
Mm-hmm.
The sources mentioned some pretty intense stuff in the reviews.
Yeah, this is where you really see a reflection of, well, the current state of public discourse. Some reviews get incredibly direct, very politically charged.
Okay, like what?
Well, just reporting on what was found in the reviews, one from September 2023 apparently blames, quote, reason-hating leftists in this country for ushering in inflation and the current crime wave through their childish economic and social policies.
Oof. Okay, very strong political take there.
Very. And then on the other side of the spectrum, another review from July just labels the hosts, quote, Trump butt-munching brainwashed boobs.
Wow, okay. So intense reactions from both ends.
Exactly. And another very brief one from February just said FDT.
Right, so it's a real display of raw, unfiltered, well, everything. It highlights how volatile audience engagement can be.
It really does. And it raises that big question, you know, how do creators deal with this kind of intense feedback,
Yeah.
especially when they've sort of invited it with that tagline?
Yeah.
What these reviews show is just the sheer intensity out there and how personal, how political media consumption has become for some people. And JR's approach seems less about trying to like manage or sanitize it and more about just embracing it. They've created a space where these strong opinions get an outlet.
Well, that was the plan or not. Yeah. It positions them as a platform for that broader, often pretty unvarnished conversation happening around Rogan and the culture he represents.
Exactly. But beyond just the fiery reviews, it does seem like they've built a real community.
How so?
Well, they actively link to their Patreon for support. They have a subreddit that's apparently quite lively.
Okay.
And they maintain active Instagram accounts, not just for themselves, but also linking to the main JRE people like Rogan and Jamie Vernon.
So they're plugged into that whole ecosystem.
Yeah, and it's not just a hobby. They've got sponsors like BetterHelp and AdvertiseCast, so there's a clear commercial operation there too.
Right, which really underlines your earlier point. This isn't just some derivative thing. It's become its own standalone entity.
Absolutely, with its own support system, its
Right.
own community, its own commercial viability.
And the reach seems pretty wide, too. Not just a US thing.
Apparently not. The sources say the show is available and popular in countries across Africa, Asia, Europe, and the Americas,
Wow.
which underscores its broad global appeal. This kind of meta commentary, this desire to dig deeper into primary content, it clearly resonates internationally.
Okay, so wrapping things up a bit. We've dived into the Joe Rogan experience. We've seen it's this unique, often provocative commentary show. We looked at the hosts' candid takes, their criticisms of Rogan, and this really fervent community around them, expressing everything from, drinking games to intense political views.
Yeah, and what really stands out, I think, is how JR Lai works as this kind of microcosm for how audiences engage with big, long-form content these days. It's clearly not just about passive consumption anymore for a lot of people. It's about dissecting, critiquing, finding others who share your insights, and sometimes, yeah, maybe just wanting some of that mindless fun bullshit they talked about.
Yeah.
It reflects this real desire for analysis, for the behind-the-scenes thinking, and for a space where the conversation about the content can be just as engaging as the content itself. It feels like a definite evolution in media interaction.
Ultimately, yeah, JR Lee isn't just reviewing Rogan. It feels like it's capturing something about the current moment, how we talk about media, react to it, even get frustrated by it.
It's a reflection of this landscape where basically any piece of content can spark a whole new layer of conversation, of critique, of community building around it.
So for you listening, maybe consider this. What does the existence and the success of a commentary podcast like the Joe Rogan Experience really tell us? What does it say about the future of how we consume media, about this collective hunger we seem to have for both the original stuff and its endless analysis?
Yeah, will this kind of meta commentary become even more mainstream? It's definitely something to mull over.
Something to think about until our next deep dive.